This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting on demand from Buffalo, New York, recording this episode for Monday, May 3rd, 2021. AEW partner Turner has emerged as the buyer of NHL rights. What will it mean for AEW Dynamite on Wednesday night? And what does the deal say about the future value of TV sports rights? The latest on wrestling TV viewership as April comes to an end, with competition from the NFL draft as well as a presidential address. How many people are actually using Peacock? Comcast had an earnings report this past week that shed some light on that question. Triple H sold W stock. What, if anything, does it mean? And Variety has new information this week about digital video viewing and U.S. viewership demographics. All that and more. But first, we are joined by our colleague Chris Gullo, who is, I think, fresh from the road. You have just emerged from the long and winding professional wrestling road, have you not?
Yeah, I just got back from Columbus.
Columbus, Ohio?
Yes. Yeah. This wasn't a wrestling trip, though.
Well, it wasn't.
It was it was a personal, like a friend of mine was having a diaper party.
You told me about this.
Yes. Well, I mean, the week before I was in Jersey, but, you know, this week was just driving to Columbus for just personal reasons.
I don't know what I've been up to. I've been doing Python all week, which no one, I couldn't begin to explain what this means. I've been doing, I don't know how many lines of code are in this thing, but I'm now into a 600 line code program in Python that involves, hopefully the Mitches aren't listening, but involves scraping data from Shoba's Daily, which, have you visited the wonderful website Shoba's Daily, Chris Gullo?
I just get all my Shoba's Daily reports from you, so I have not actually gone to their website.
So what would the wrestling news industry be without Shoba's Daily? I don't know if they know. We should invite them on this podcast to discuss how valuable they are. And all the wrestling fans who leave comments at the bottom of their posts asking for additional programs that do not make the top 150. But anyway, I'm trying to make a program that automatically takes the numbers from Shoba's Daily every day. And as you may know, this is why I asked you if you've been to the site. So they will post an image of a chart, and that chart is just an image. You can't copy and paste it. But at the bottom, they do put text of just 18 to 49 and P2+. So, but in the image, we get like 8 or 9 demos. So I would like that information, but you have to like manually enter it into a spreadsheet or something, which is what I've been doing for the last several years. And that's what's in the WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet, which all the patrons have access to. So it would be nice to know what the wider TV trends are in those other demographics, but you need a machine that will read text out of an image. And I have found such a thing, which is not free. So thanks to all the supporters through Patreon who have provided us with some funds that we can use to enhance our research here at WrestleNomics, seriously. And I'm beginning to do that. It costs me like a few cents every time I process an image, but we can do that now. And it'll help me, it'll keep me from making so many mistakes when I tweet the ratings news and whatnot. That's basically working right now, but it's a matter of, I don't know, sorting out the details and the broadcast, not just the cable. So I've been focusing a lot on the cable because the cable is what is available in text, but the broadcast, so we're talking about network programs, ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, don't forget CW.
Yep, CW.
Those are only in images. The Mitches never post those in text, at least in any full kind of way. So I have now scraped a lot of broadcast data, and those scrape pretty nicely. You know, with this is called OCR, optical computer, I don't know, something reader, and it can get pretty messy, but those scrape pretty well. those convert, and we will. The idea is that I will be able to merge eventually the cable data and the broadcast data and tell and get better senses of, like, well, which we'll talk about in a moment. You know, how difficult was the competition that such and such wrestling program was going up against? You know, I can get a pretty good sense of what was on cable, but broadcast is more difficult because it's locked in that image. But the NFL draft, for example, aired on ABC, and did it air on ESPN as well? I don't even know off the top of my head.
Yep. And NFL Network.
Right. And the presidential speech aired on all different cable and network channels. So this will give me a more complete view of what's going on in TV. And to compare, you know, oh, well, this program's, you know, Raw is down year over year by this degree. Well, how does that compare? We know how it compares to cable, but it'll allow me to include broadcast if that is in any way useful. So that's what I've been doing this past week.
Keeping busy. Yeah, that's for sure.
Yes.
Well, if we want to get right into it, you know, TV is going to be the theme of a lot of today, and we'll kind of get right into the first story that we have here for WrestleNomics this week, and is Turner buying the rights to the NHL. Now, these are the secondary rights, as ESPN has the first rights to it, but they basically have the same rights that NBC Universal had before, and it looks like they outbid NBC Universal. And that deal is going to be up to $225 million a year. And then the overall NHL rights haul is going to be $625 million, which is looked to be more than double of what they were originally getting. Now, obviously, and we're going to hear from Tony Khan himself on the show here, but I want to hear your thoughts on this, because you've been stressing how live sports is such a commodity for these networks. And the NHL traditionally doesn't have the greatest ratings in a lot of markets. The markets that it usually does successful in are more mid market and not like top 10 markets. So, I mean, this just shows that live programming is assessed in such a high value.
Yeah. And I would have to dig into the NBC SN numbers, but, you know, NHL ratings were definitely not increasing. They were declining. But live sports, you know, NHL is decisively the fourth most popular of the big four team sports. But no, I think it signals, at least among these big ones, and that those sports rights are going to continue to grow in value still. There's no bubble that's about to burst. So I think that's maybe a good sign for wrestling rights, at least for WWE and AEW. Something that Nick Khan alluded to in the earnings call a couple weeks ago, though, is that maybe the biggest players will definitely benefit. The NFL will eat everybody's lunch if they have to. Will the secondary players on the tier below that, will they sort of get squeezed out with no more resources left to pay them with? And does WWE fall into that tier someday? Does AEW fall into that tier? We'll see. Do we know that NBC was outbid? Did they bid? Because according to Nick Khan,
I mean, that's, I don't know if we know that for true, but it seems like, I mean, I would imagine there'd be an interest there, and I'm sure an offer was put in and, you know, Turner getting it. I mean, it wasn't like, I mean, yes, the ratings were declining, but this live sports demand is so huge. Why wouldn't they try to retain it on their networks?
Yeah. I wonder if maybe this is a decision that they sort of came to that led to the announcement that, you know, NBC Sports Network is going to fold, but we'll let the sports media podcasts like Richard Deitch and so forth handle that. But Tony Khan, so what does this mean for AEW on Wednesday night? Because Wednesday night hockey is a big night. Is that what they call hockey night in Canada? Is that Wednesday night?
No, that's Saturday.
That's Saturday? Okay.
Yeah, and that's the CBC. I think CBC still has it. I couldn't tell you. CBC
or CTV. Right?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you which Canadian network is the one that has it still. But that's traditionally Saturday nights. But Wednesday night was the NBC hockey night. And
does Don Cherry still have CBC?
I think he got fired from.
Has he been canceled?
From hockey night in Canada. He was canceled. Yes, he actually was. You just guessed that, didn't you?
No, I think I heard that. That's okay. All right. let's not get into why. So Wednesday night might be a hockey night for TNT is the moral of the story here. Obviously NHL isn't running year round, but this will begin at the beginning of the next NHL season, which was that, is that going to be October now? Are we reset to the normal schedule?
I think we're reset to normal as of right now.
So maybe as early as next fall, is AEW going to have to move or be on a different night? Or maybe Wednesday night hockey will be on a different channel altogether. We don't really know, but Tony Khan was on Busted Open on Wednesday, coincidentally, but to promote Dynamite. And he had these comments.
Tony, the Turner Broadcasting networks have gotten a lot stronger. The NHL contract now 7 years, you know, and now everybody's talking, oh my gosh, is AEW Dynamite going to move? Is this going to be a crazy situation? Do you worry about that at all? Or are you perfectly fine and know that Wednesday night is your slot in your home?
I know Wednesday night's our slot in our home, and we're in a great situation. I'm thrilled with our partnership with TNT. You know, it's a lifeblood of our company. It's our primary revenue source. And it's the way most fans get exposed to AEW and see the show. And tonight and every Wednesday that we do Dynamite, I think, you know, for a lot of wrestling fans, it's a really important night of the week. And so I want everyone to rest assured that they're not going to have to worry about these kinds of majors. You know, we have a contract. We have 2.5 years left on it, over 2.5 years left on it, for Wednesday nights in this slot. And if there was ever an opportunity to move, or if there was a deal to be had, I would consider it. And it, you know, if we did something, it would have to be a really good deal for AEW. It would have to make sense for us. But you know, as it stands right now, that is the spot we're in tonight, 8 to 10 Wednesday nights on TNT. And if we move, you know, I would certainly consider a deal if there was something in it for AEW.
So there's Tony Khan on Wednesday. My read on that is that, you know, we love our business partners. Of course, you have to say that at the beginning of every conversation that it concerns your business partners. Turner's, we're so grateful. And we have such a good relationship with them. But it sounds like if their spot does get threatened by the NHL, that they'll use it as leverage to get something out of it for AEW, whether that's a renegotiated deal, money, or something else.
And there's a lot of variables right now. He probably doesn't know much more than we do, as far as what it entails, because we have to remember ESPN being the major rights holder. They didn't actively have it last year other than airing games on ESPN Plus. So we don't know where it's going to fit in their landscape of broadcasting, as well as I have heard that it's not just TNT, TBS could possibly have hockey too. So yeah. There's a lot of ways that they can go with this. And I mean, if they're doing consistent numbers in Dynamite on Wednesday nights for Dynamite that they like, and like I said, the NHL, I don't have it off the top of my head, but I don't think it blows. I don't think it does much more than Dynamite. If no. It might even do less.
No, especially in the demo. I mean, we're talking about Turner here. We know that Turner's told AEW that they really value the demo more than total viewership. Who knows what it will do on TNT? I expect it will perform. If they say it's on TNT, I expect it would perform the same, if not better, than NBC Sports Network. I suspect it would perform a little bit better. So AEW right now is putting up 0.30, 0.40 sometimes in the demo. We're going to see where they really even out here in the next few weeks now that they're unopposed by NXT. But I think NHL games, I would have to look it up. And the giant Excel spreadsheet with all the Showbiz Daily info is too big for me to open up right now. But I think they were doing under a 0.20 in the demo for, you know, these Wednesday night games. But when you're a TV network, does that really matter though? Because you can get, even though you have a lower rating with the NHL, you might be able to sell better, you know, might be able to generate more ad revenue because it's the NHL and not pro wrestling.
And I imagine TNT will put their own spin on it like they did with the NBA, where they have all these dynamic personalities on the pre and the halftime show with Barkley and Shaq and Kenny Smith. And, you know, NBC Sports didn't have that for hockey. Like, so I can imagine them getting those type of guys.
Would you suggest were some good promos for the NHL?
Well, maybe they'll uncancel Don Cherry or his name escapes me but there was the guy with the, I don't know why I can't think of it, a guy with a really good, nice mullet from ESPN. But he would be somebody.
Ray Melrose.
Yes. Yeah. Barry Melrose is a guy that they could look at. Jeremy Roenick is a pretty dynamic media personality. There's guys out there. So,
So that's basically my thoughts. I would be a little, I guess it's sort of like, you know, your friend has a new friend who's, cooler than you are, I guess, even though you're really doing better than that friend is in some ways. And, you know, I would be a little unsettled about it. They're never going to show that publicly, whether they are or not. But there's that. So, but maybe it leads to some way to leverage some benefit for AEW.
All right. So we will move on to viewership, Brandon, and all the wrestling, because there's so much now, the wrestling related programming throughout the week. And we're going to start with April 23rd's SmackDown.
So the overnight rating. So we're talking about April 23rd, which is 2 weeks ago, Friday. Yeah. Whenever you listen to the show, we're always talking about an older episode, which is what we have the final ratings for. We have the overnight for this most recent Friday night. The most recent Friday night looks to have done under 2 million, somewhere around maybe 1.9 million. Going against the NFL draft on ABC. The second round, though, the second day.
Yeah, second and third round, yeah.
That's what they're doing on the second day, is the second and third round?
Yeah.
Okay. And so maybe it was affected by that. I don't know. But yeah, SmackDown's always the most viewed program in the wrestling universe. That demo is maybe falling a little bit. But we are going to enter into this time here of May. We're now in May. We are recording. Most people are probably listening to this on the 3rd. But we're recording on the 2nd, and we're now in May. And wrestling viewership, as patrons of WrestleNomics know, because there's a post about it this week, behind the paywall, wrestling viewership in May for Raw and even for SmackDown, because May has always fallen in such a way that it did not benefit as much from the year-over-year increases between all their network and time slot changes. But anyway, main roster W viewership always falls month to month in May. It always falls from May from where it was in April, sometimes by double digits, sometimes by as much as 20%. So I would expect Raw and SmackDown viewership to be substantially lower this month than it was last month.
We may see the biggest drop in a long time in the summer, and it's nothing even to do with the product. It's the summer and people are getting vaccinated, mm-hmm. and all the stuff they wanted to do last summer, all they want to go do it this summer. I mean, I know a lot of weddings that were canceled last year, they got pushed to this year. So there's like double weddings happen. Like it's going to be a very active summer for, you know, Americans or just people generally, because of being vaccinated and it being a little more free reigned as far as the restrictions and whatnot. So I expect TV ratings as a whole to go down this summer.
That's good spin. If any W executives are listening, take notes. You might want to reference those on the next show. Explain away declining ratings, if there are declining ratings. Yeah, we had AEW Dynamite on Wednesday, of course. 1.1 million viewers last week. 1.2 million viewers week before that this week, going against President Biden's address to Congress. It was to Congress, right? 889,000 viewers. So that's down substantially. 0.33 demo rating versus 0.37 the week before versus 0.44 the week before that. So that's a big decline. And again, the 18-49 had not been growing, had not been exploding as much as the overall audience had, because they had this huge injection of people over the age of 50 who are now watching AEW and before they were watching NXT or something. But you can, I never take one week that seriously.
Especially for the 50 plus. I mean, it was a presidential speech. Like, that seems to be.
I would not have expected it to decline this much, but it did. And we'll see what happens next week. You know, I always, since I've now committed to doing all the doing a tweet now every day, I have to do it every afternoon. There's a rating. Monday it's SmackDown, Tuesday it's Raw, Wednesday it's NXT, Thursday it's AEW, and Friday it's Impact. And I get many quote tweets of people taking one rating to mean a conclusion to some vast narrative. But I don't know. It's just one week's rating. We'll see what happens. If it stays below a million, you might be like, all right, well, maybe there was just a little explosion there for the first weeks that they were unopposed, and now we're getting back to a normal place. And in addition to what I said earlier about May being this month of decline for Raw and SmackDown, how does that affect AEW Dynamite or NXT? I don't know. NXT is obviously a WWE product. Is there some sort of WrestleMania slump, post-WrestleMania slump that they'll be into? They kind of peak with takeovers around that time. Does this matter at all to AEW? Is this strictly a WWE thing? Obviously, these programs existed last year in April, but last year in April, we were in the early days of the pandemic and everybody's ratings were falling pretty badly. But we'll see.
We have Blood and Guts next week. And then Eugene Nagata, John Moxley next week after. Yeah.
That's right. I'll be too.
So I would expect be a bump up, maybe a little over a million, but I expect a bump up, especially with Blood and Guts next week. And I think the live effect has something to do with it. Even though spoilers don't get out, I just feel like people, if they know it's not live, the less people tune in. I know that sounds weird.
Whether it's live or not in any given week. I don't know if anybody knows. I mean, I'm sure there's a segment of people that think that way. I don't know if anybody.
I've figured out their schedule. Like, I could tell their taping schedule. Yeah. So,
yeah, I'm sure if you think about it for a minute, you can figure it out.
Yeah.
But you can book Shaq. You can book Mike Tyson. And maybe they draw some ratings. But this week you have Eugene Nagata, and that's a whole different level. So we'll see what happens. Impact also going against the NFL draft, only 120,000 viewers versus last week, 141, before that 132. They were coming off the pay-per-view where Kenny Omega won the title. So this is proof that Kenny Omega is not a draw because it's mediocre and not that good. Demo rating was fine. It was 005, same as it did last week. Very dull precision here because it's a demo rating that's so close to zero. But that's what it is. As far as and maybe the NFL draft mattered a lot, maybe it didn't, but I can tell you that Impact, their average viewership, so AEW started to interact with Impact in December of this year, right? And I have viewership going all the way back to the beginning of their run on Access. So the average viewership, let's say September, October, November before AEW, it's 168, 150, 137. And since in December, it's been 100. I'm using medians here, by the way. So this should clear away even the big spikes when it comes to that huge rating they did for the first Kenny Omega episode. So anyway, pre-AEW, 168, 150, 137. Post-AEW, 166, 155, 172, 144, 139. Not a huge difference. Those first few months, yes. But the bigger difference is in 18 to 49, where you can look at, again, September, October, November, 43, 39, 36. That's pre-AEW. Then we get to December. I'm going to recite now. December to April, 53, 58, 59, 47, 65. This is based on converting the demo rating to a viewership rating. So this is not exact, but it's probably pretty close. Again, before AEW, you're in the 30s, the 40s, maybe. After that point, after December, you're in the 50s, maybe the high 40s at worst, and maybe even into the 60s as they appear to have been in April. So, I don't know. People have brought up to me, well, is this relationship for Impact really good for Impact? This relationship with AEW really good for Impact? They're having Kenny Omega win the title, their title. Is it even helping their rating stats? Yes, it's helping their ratings. Yep. It is. They had in the spring, they were down in the 30,000 P1849 viewers per show. And now they're doing 50, sometimes 60, no worse than the high 40,000s. And that's an ad demo.
Yep. And you're starting to see New Japan talent too, which I think is helping out too for that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like New Japan fans in America are pretty much the same fans as AEW. Maybe with some exceptions, but I think like with, you got Finn Juice and now Alpha and Tasmo is now coming to Impact and stuff like that. I think that does garner an interest. New Japan doesn't really have a TV deal in the States, but all their talents seem to be popping up on other programs.
Well, they have Roku. They're on Roku every Friday night. I know you tune in on the Roku channel.
They are on the Roku.
LW was on Vice this Saturday, right? Yes, yesterday.
Yes. Yes.
Saturday. We don't have final numbers for it yet.
No, we have no numbers on that. But they I don't know if that was concurring programming or it was like a recap, because I heard
that was an old program.
Yeah,
at least this first week. I think the first couple of weeks are going to be old programming. But if it did make the top 150, we should be finding out probably Tuesday, because I think we get Saturdays on Tuesday, the final ratings. I don't strongly expect a program that aired at noon on a Saturday on Vice to make the top 150. But if it does, we will know. We will discuss it. I guess since April is over, we can talk a little. I already went through Impact, I guess, but we can talk a little bit about what the month being over tells us about this section of time, the macro trends, rather than focusing on 1 week's rating. We can talk about what happened in the month. And as you would expect, of course, AEW and NXT were up substantially. In total audience, AEW is up 32%. NXT is up 16%. This is only a partial month where they've been unopposed, but that's a median. We will get a better idea of, again, how their trends are really going to even out in May and in the following months, of course. Raw was up, and that's not year over year. That was month to month. It's similar year over year. Up 44% for AEW, up 18%. In the demo, AEW is up 39%. NXT is up 27% year over year. And Raw and SmackDown are each just down slightly in total audience by about 6% and 5% respectively. And I would consider that pretty good. Now remember, so what's TV overall doing in the universe where all TV is down? TV is down, cable is down, non-news cable is down about 25% right now on a year-over-year basis. So anything that's better than negative 25-ish percent, I would consider pretty good. And there's obviously extenuating circumstances in the cases of AEW and NXT, but they're, you know, because they're benefited from not being opposed by each other. But I think all the wrestling programs, those five, are doing pretty well right now. And I don't know if their networks are happy or what they expect, but I think they're doing fine.
Just to talk about a little more viewership from the week, we did see a drop on the A&E biographies. The Roddy Piper did 880,000, which was a drop from Stone Cold, which did over a million. And then the Most Wanted Treasure, 769, which I not a huge drop from where it was. And this was Undertaker and Kane, but not a huge drop from the Mick Foley episode. I am kind of surprised about the drop there. I mean, I guess Austin is a bigger star than Piper, but.
And it was the first is always going to do. Tonight is, who's tonight? Do you know?
Macho Man.
The Macho, that's right. Macho Man, Randy Savage, that's right. So these are doing really well. I did not expect them to do this well. I wonder how much Dark Side of the Ring played into this decision to be able to sell this. Vice is a smaller network than AEW, and they're doing better viewership than Vice was doing for Dark Side of the Ring. But let's not take anything away from Dark Side of the Ring on Vice. Those are the biggest ratings that Vice has ever done. I think the Owen Hart episode is like the network's biggest show ever.
Comes back this week too.
That's right.
But they have released the first hour of the Pillman episode on YouTube. So
I've seen people talking about that. They're doing Nick Gage. They're doing FMW. They're doing
Plane Ride from Hell.
That's right. Yes.
I'm actually really intrigued by the Collision in Korea. I've actually listened to podcasts on it too, but like I just couldn't imagine what was going through those talents. Actually doing a wrestling show in North Korea. So
I'm looking forward in a few years to the Saudi Arabia episode.
I mean, I'm sure it's been discussed, especially now we know some of those people that were probably stuck in that plane have been released.
Oh yeah. So yeah.
They could talk.
Confidential witness number one is no longer with WB. Yeah, Miz and Mrs. 670,000 viewers, which is almost the same as it did the week before with the lead out. It's getting the lead in from Raw. These A&E shows continue to do all right. I guess I'm slightly surprised that the biographies are doing better. But then when you think about how well Dark Side of the Ring did, and you know, how much energy there is around brief engagements with nostalgia, it makes sense.
History documentaries are becoming back in. Like, you've seen the History Channel pivot back.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading, so you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio, and then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages have arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the UV video lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
To that. But they do like the live reenactments with, like, you see the food that built America and the men that built America and the Titans that built America, like all these, like, and they do like, I mean, I don't have, but I their Twitter trends are crazy. Like, I would imagine they do very well. I mean, if Twitter doesn't mean anything, if you ask Nick Khan, but
wait a minute, they're doing great on digital and social. The eyeballs are moving.
History documentaries are kind of are becoming back in, you know, and it's a nostalgia factor.
You're a big history documentary fan, are you not?
Is I love true? History documentaries, yes.
You and Tony Soprano. Right. What's next?
All right. Well, I don't know. We didn't really discuss, like, NXT did 744,000. So a little bit of a dip overall. 280,000 of that was the 18-49, and then I think we did cover everything else. Yeah, we talked about Impact and all that, so we can move on to our good friend Paul Levesque. Sold a little bit of his stock. He sold 43% of the shares that he held. Completed the sale, and it sold at original at the average price, which is $55.60, which they've been around for their share, and it's worth about $2 million. Now, I know you kind of gone deep in this, and of course, people are going to jump to conclusions on things like this, but it was just kind of a standard, hey, let's make a financial move.
This means for himself. Triple H is pessimistic about WWE. He's on his way out, right? This is what this means. I feel like sometimes my job is to diffuse.
Yeah.
This isn't a story, but it's a story. But I mean, I wrote an article about it. It better be a story. But it's not. It's easy to misconstrue what these things mean. People sell stock all the time in WWE who are executives. I mean, all the time. Once in a while, every couple months, every month or so, there's, I would say, in a given quarter, there's a few of these, right? And but mostly, it's done by people who do not garner clicks on news websites and social media. It's people like Patricia Gotsman. And maybe Alan Wexler, who remembers the board of directors, or Gotsman used to be. Let's not confuse anybody here. But Triple H actually, you know, for a long time, he's been accumulating stock, and he had not made any sales up until last year. So that is interesting. That is remarkable. He's been getting stock. I think he gets it every year. I don't think he gets it for being on the board of directors, which he is. But I think because he's an executive, he doesn't get that additional board compensation. Not sure. But anyway, he gets stock as part of his compensation at least every year, I think. And he has millions of dollars worth of W stock. This represented, I think, as you mentioned, 43% of his stock at that time before the sale. He still has millions of dollars, a couple, $2-3 million worth of stock. I think I
have probably say 2.5 is probably left.
$2.4 million worth of stock at market value. He made a few sales last year in May and in August. In May, he made a sale of 23,255 shares. And 2 days later, his wife, Chief Brand Officer Stephanie McMahon, made the exact same number of shares. She sold the exact same number of shares. So that points to me that was something personal, some sort of personal financing decision that they made. And that's probably what any of this stuff is. Does it tell you that they're not expecting the stock to jump and spike tomorrow? Probably. Yeah, that probably does tell you that. I think there's just, they probably want to buy something big or save money for their kids or who knows. And that's all it is. But it's
maybe trying some other investments. Hey, we have all this built in money. Let's buy $1 million of Dogecoin. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's back on the up.
Maybe Triple H is going to buy a lot of motorcycles and leather jackets. Maybe have you seen the NXT set lately? What is going on with the aesthetic of NXT?
The Capital Wrestling Center.
Yes,
it looks like something out of a 1991 WCW pay per view. Like that's what it looks like to me. Like WCW presents Rage in the Cage with the Barbarian versus Sting as the main event.
One of our colleagues here, the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, Garrett Kidney, I think put it best that it looks like a level from Wolfenstein.
That's good.
Yeah. So that's all. Yeah. About the Triple H thing. Paul Levesque.
So I got a question for you, Brandon. How popular is the WWE? Well, Gavin Bridge from Variety kind of dug into that a little bit. Of how popular WWE is as far as in like YouTube views and demographic breakdown, all that, if you want to get into that.
Yes, this is an article from Variety. I'm going to pull up something that I did earlier this week. Why don't you summarize these charts that are in the notes here?
All right. Well, we have the global total monthly minutes that were watched on YouTube, and WWE surpasses a lot of major sports organizations and sports media conglomerates. WWE, they have here, did 4.5 billion views in March of 2021. To give you a little perspective, just under a billion for UFC and NBA. And I mean, NBA is under a billion, ESPN's under a billion, the NFL is under a billion, MLB's under a billion, the Olympics are under a billion, and they stayed like that. You see a little bit of spikes over a billion, but they were pretty much all under a billion, where WWE pretty much from April 2020 to March 2020 range anywhere from 4.5 billion to probably 3.7, back up to like, it looks like 4.7 at one point, and right now they're around 4.5. So that surprises me, but I mean, yes and no. I know a lot of people that don't watch Raw and SmackDown every week, but you know how they know what's going on in Raw and SmackDown every week? They'll watch the clips on YouTube. And I mean, WWE does a great job with their social media marketing and stuff like that. I am a little surprised it's that much more than like the NBA and the NFL. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the Olympics and ESPN, really, they're probably going to keep most of their stuff like with them. I mean, that doesn't surprise me, but it kind of surprised me that it's, you know, 3.5 billion more than the NFL and NBA.
I think there's two things to read from this. Is that, I think for one, WWE is disproportionately global than most of these other brands, right? The NFL, primarily it's a U.S. product. Most valuable media product in the U.S., but it's primarily a U.S. Not that there aren't people around the world who watch the NFL, but it's disproportionately U.S. NBA, a bit more global. And you see NBA is at the top of this, right? Before we get to the giant, you know, the stratosphere way above that WWE lives in. Olympics are obviously global, but the Olympics are four times, well, if it's including winter in years, you know, every 2 years. So I think wrestling fans or WWE fans specifically are disproportionately global, and they're probably also disproportionately engaged with social and digital media, at least concerning WWE they are. And I think the difference in the case of WWE is that a wrestling program is broken up into all these little segments that are, for the most part, exclusive from each other. So there's all these little bites to check out, I guess. Whereas a sports game, an NFL game, NBA, MLB, NBA, is this more linear narrative. So I think it's different in that way. So there's that. But I think there's also a replacement factor happening here as far as people who are less engaged. I think people who are more engaged, I think, are more likely, all other things being equal, to consume through linear. Because that's the way that you primarily are able to watch it live. I guess as far as any of these things are concerned, there's only one way to watch any of these things live, and that's through linear TV, unless you're doing something illegal.
It's very rarely you're going to want to watch a sports highlight over and over and over I mean, you want to watch it live, or you watch it even on like a recap in ESPN on SportsCenter, you know. And I think what happens too is that it's not just like NBA will put out the highlight of, oh, look at this, you know, crazy move by LeBron James. ESPN's going to put it out. The basketball team themselves is going to put it out. You know, maybe the local paper is going to put the clip. It's going to be shared in a lot of things, and it's not just coming from the NBA. So not all eyes are going on the NBA social media, if you know what I mean. It's you're going to get the clip from multiple sources. Where WWE is
talking about YouTube here, right? You're saying that are you sure that these other media outlets have the rights to put an NBA clip on their YouTube channel?
I mean, I think at least the sports organization themselves and like ESPN and TNT do. Yeah.
I think there's another factor. Yeah, go.
That's what I was saying. And I mean, if you just look at the, I mean, and I, and the channel views right now, in March, WWE was a little over 80 million. Yeah. I mean, the NBA in March definitely took a dive, to like 15, but their highest was 35 million and they were like the closest to it. So that shows you just the big divide of that. But, yeah, no, what I mean is like, yeah, you can, you know, maybe not the other media outlets, but ESPN or TNT, whoever has the game, will put highlights on too.
And I think another factor is there's a rewatch factor. I think less so that people are watching the same clip, the same new clip over and over again, but that there are people who are viewing new content and there are people who are viewing old content too. You can find, I think one of the most viewed clips on videos on W's YouTube channel is like a Rey Mysterio versus Great Khali match, which, you know, it's like a full match, which certainly wasn't posted on YouTube at the time. It was never new content to YouTube. It was only, you know, old content. So I think that's the thing about wrestling is that that's why their library is more valuable and has more of a shelf life than other sports libraries do, because nobody wants to sit down and watch a 3-hour NFL game from 10 or 20 years ago. Uh-huh. That's rare. But more people, as a percentage of their audience, are willing to watch an old wrestling pay-per-view, for example. So I think there's that. So I think it's disproportionately global. I think the people are disproportionately engaged in digital, maybe by their nature, but also by their semi-engagement. And there's more of a appetite for old content among WWE fans.
One of the things that WWE does differently too is they put a lot of exclusive content out there, like on YouTube, like interviews and little shows and stuff like that, where NBA, MLB, ESPN, they have their own networks. They want to keep a lot of that, especially for their streaming services, especially like ESPN is going to pull a lot of that secondary stuff on ESPN Plus.
So that's a view of what they're doing digitally. Other metrics just to check in on WWE popularity. There's not much that we can really look at on a year-over-year basis in 2021, we're really only going to look at 2020. We have TV viewership, which is complicated, but TV viewership over the last, I did this chart on my Twitter on, I don't know what this was, Tuesday or something, where I charted 2017, 18, 19, and 20. And over those 4 years, how much did all these metrics that I'm about to go through decline? And total viewership declined 14% for Raw. How does that compare to TV overall using top 50 non-news cable? Top 50 non-news cable declined 11% again. Raw down 14%. TV overall down 11%. But in 1849, which W does pretty well in 1849, but that's down 18% over those 4 years. Top non-news cable down 16%. So a little bit, only by a couple percentage points. A little bit lower than top 50 non-news cable. Over those 4 years, W Network, which is a new form of media, which I think you should expect to have grown, up 1% from 2017. And I'm using the average number of subscribers by day across the entire year, which is something that they report publicly. There's been no ticket sales in 2020 other than WrestleMania. That was 2022. But from 2017 to 2019, ticket sales were down 37%. In North America, worldwide, we're also down 37%. And those are averages. But if you want to look at the total attendance, because maybe it's skewed by the number of events they run, well, that was down worse, down 44%. E-commerce has really benefited in 2020 because there was no venue merch, or maybe people just got really interested in buying certain merchandise. But revenue merchandise that's bought online is up 5% over those 4 years. product licensing revenues. So that's revenues related to things like action figures and video games and other categories. That's down 7% over those 4 years. AVOD viewing, as we just alluded to, is up 31% in terms of hours viewed. So that's not just clicks, views, but that's actual time spent viewing. And that's global. That's up 31%. Google Web Search, though, Google Web Search Index from Google Trends, down 21% over that same time period, 4 years. But revenue is up 7%. And operating income, which is a measure of profitability, is up 44%. So basically, all the numbers, all the metrics that I just went through are all down, except for the W Network, which is up, which was up 1%. E-commerce, which is up 5%. And ad-supported video on demand viewing. It's basically just online video viewing across YouTube, Facebook, etc. That is up 31%. But total revenue up, total operating income up, because as we talk about all the time here, media values are through the roof, despite declining ratings.
You also have a chart here, Brandon, that you sent to me with the U.S. demographic viewership breakdown. Yes. So how much percentage of, you know, that viewer is a certain age group?
The moral of the story here, I think, is that all these programs are the same in terms of age breakdown. They're all the same. This idea that AEW has this younger viewer than W programs, that was
bared
out.
Very close too.
Yeah, that was bared out in TV viewership, but that was bared out in TV viewership because more young people were watching AEW over NXT, which made NXT look disproportionately old and made AEW look disproportionately young. I saw this in the Facebook ad surveys that I did, where everybody looks to be the same. Maybe you want to talk about Ring of Honor and Impact. Maybe that's different. Maybe New Japan's different. But at least the WWE versus the AEW viewer, they're roughly the same age. I don't think there's any big significant age demographic difference. I do think there are differences in terms of WWE has more African American fans by proportion than AEW does. Maybe Hispanic fans as well. But in terms of age, I don't think there's a strong difference here.
All right, so we're going to move on to the Peacock.
The Peacock.
The Peacock, yes.
I want to enforce a Vince McMahon-like rule here that anytime we refer to NBC Universal streaming service, it needs to be referred to as the Peacock. The Peacock.
It's the Peacock, yeah. There was another Variety article. This time it was by Heidi Chung. And really, we want to know how many people are actually using Peacock. And has maybe WWE helped Peacock, you know, as far as their overall subscriber base?
Yes. So this Variety article, this was just covering the Comcast quarterly report, which was this past week. So Comcast is the parent company of NBC Universal, which is the company behind the Peacock. So in their earnings report, which I did glance at the transcript, and the CEO of Comcast is there, and the CEO of NBC Universal. There's multiple CEOs in the same room for this earnings report. Imagine that. Funnily enough, nobody will care about this but me, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. Comcast's Senior Vice President of Investor Relations is Marcy Riviker, I think, who I was like, I know that name from somewhere. She used to be a stock analyst who covered WWE. Now, Senior Vice President of Investor Relations at Comcast. How about that? Small world, huh? Anyway, WWE did get mentioned. I did do a control F in the transcript for WWE. They did mention it a couple times in passing because just the nature of the W Network coming to the Peacock. but the excerpt from the Variety article that I think is relevant to us is this, where Heidi Chung writes, Peacock, which was being closely watched by investors, added 9 million signups and now boasts 42 million domestic signups. It's not subscribers, it's signups. It goes on. Comcast attributed some of Peacock's growth to The Office and its recent exclusive deal with the WWE Network. But to clarify yet again, quote unquote, signups does not equal paid subscribers. There is still no clarity on how many people are paying for the service and how much money Comcast is making from users. All we know is monthly active accounts, which illustrates how many households use Peacock monthly, and those were about a third of the 42 million signups, or about 14 million accounts. end quote. That's again from Heidi Chung at Variety. 14 million accounts are using Peacock on an average monthly basis. I read that that's all US. So think about that in contrast to the 1.1 million subscribers that WWE has specifically to its service, direct to consumer, until it sold the rights to NBC Universal in January. So in theory, that's a lot more people who could watch WrestleMania or whatever WWE content that they want. Doesn't mean they are. I'm sure a small fraction of those 14 million have touched WWE content on Peacock, but who knows? There it is. 14 million people have access to this. Now we know.
All right. And going into our last story of the week, we actually have some pay-per-view buy estimates from the Wrestling Observer. Kind of just going some of the highlights here. AEW Revolution looks to be he's closer to 159,000 total book buys, which earlier report was 125,000. So good news for AEW on that. Now you have to remember that this is doesn't include network subscriptions and stuff like that. So this is people traditionally buying pay-per-view like the way they used to. The biggest buy for WWE was SummerSlam. Well, Royal Rumble 77,300, and then SummerSlam and WrestleMania at 6,800, and then actually NXT TakeOver 5,300, the one on October 4th. And just kind of some other notes here. Interesting, the NWA United Wrestling Network November 3rd pay-per-view did 3,700, which is actually more than Elimination Chamber did. And Ring of Honor Final Battle did about 3,100, but that doesn't include the Honor Club service. So, I mean, people don't really traditionally buy wrestling pay-per-view, obviously, for WWE anymore. I mean, they're there. There's, you know, 3,000 to 7,000 people doing it, but
paying $60.
Paying $60.
So, let's talk about what these numbers are. This is something that Dave reported in the Observer this past Friday morning. This would have come out. He apparently got a report from someone who works in the pay-per-view industry, probably the cable industry. So it looks like he got a report from one cable or satellite company and has extrapolated probably, okay, we know that this cable company controls X percent of the universe. So we extrapolate that to 100% and we get this number. Is that a big enough sample? We don't know because he's not telling us how much of a sample by percentage this was. So I don't know. Maybe take it with a grain of salt, but you know, whatever. We'll see. The thing is, we never really know what the pay-per-view numbers really are. It's not like UFC where UFC will make a public statement. I wish that these wrestling companies would, you know, but they don't. And I wonder if, you know, even when UFC makes their reports, they make these reports like that night or the next day or something. The pay-per-view industry is such a lagged industry in terms of getting the actual sales. It takes a long time to even know, I think, with certainty what the final number was. But obviously, you can make an estimate based on the activity that you are aware of that night. So who knows? Maybe 159,000 now, Dave thinks, for the pay-per-view number for AEW or the promoter who's grew up reading the Observer like I did, and is now in control of the second biggest company in the world. So doing well, Dave.
Anything else you'd like to talk about this week, Brandon?
I don't know. I've got a MLW report also from the Observer. The story has been floated that they are maybe going to have some sort of working agreement, maybe, with WWE.
Yeah, I did see that.
I don't know. I mean, I think MLW and Corp Power have been done an impressive job of sort of gradually climbing the ladder in terms of getting these media deals, whether it's BN Sport or DAZN, not DAZN, but DAZN.
Confusing
branding there, but DAZN is the pronunciation apparently. And now with Vice, I think that's impressive. I don't know what the point of differentiation is about MLW. They call their matches fights and they purport to have a more sports-like presentation. I'm not sure how much that's really bared out in the content other than that branding. So I don't have a ton of optimism for what MLW could really grow into beyond, a level well beyond where it is now. But, know, I think they've done a great job making deals throughout the media industry. I think WB will, the report is that it would be a place, MLW would be a place for, by God, they've got all these wrestlers. Let's give them something to do. And then
maybe NXT talents. Yeah. And that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
And, strategically, cynically, it's a way to, here's this brand that's growing and getting into these media deals. Maybe we should sort of put our thumb on that and make sure we're in control of this company. We can, you know, eat up the personnel and the wrestlers if we have to, much like Evolve and various companies in the UK that like Progress that they've, you know, that they made relationships with and cannibalized from the inside.
It's no, you say that, and that's exactly what I was thinking. Like, they get in there, and then they would really be the first dibs if they want to take Tom Lawler or Calvin Tankman or Richard Holiday or the Von Erichs. Like, these are all
or Corey Bauer
or Corey Bauer himself. Yeah, or the
Gabe's now working for NXT.
Yeah, so maybe, right? there's definitely people there. And then they're like commentary team. I mean, Rich Rokini's there, but I know like they use a lot of sports guys too, which you mean know WWE loves sports guys now for their like announcing, like guys with really good sports experience. So it makes sense to me. I mean, and WWE can say, oh, look, we're working with people who really, we know, you know, it's to their benefit, you know?
Yeah. And Triple H will go on a conference call and say, everybody's making too big of a deal about this. Everybody builds this up in their heads. Like it's, you know, some kind of war or that, you know, we're trying to mess with people. We don't know. We want everybody. The rising boat lifts all ships. We love all those guys. And, you know, people are just, they craft their own narrative.
And meanwhile, Ring of Honor is like, they CMLL just terminated their relationship with them. And
that's true.
They're just there. Yeah.
We could talk about that. I don't have that much to say about it.
I don't know much. I mean, it's, Lucha Libre is actually really fixated in the Ring of Honor style right now. So it, to me, I mean, they have those guys under contracts, the Rush and Dragon Lee and all. I believe a lot of those guys are under contract Ring of Honor, which is huge, but you don't have that feeder system now. And AAA seems to have a relationship with Impact and AEW. So, yep. I mean that's all I got for this week. So I guess we'll do some social media plugs. You could check me out, Chris Gullo on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook fan page. And I also check out my other podcast, Rediscovering the Indies, RTI Pod on Twitter, and then Instagram and Facebook. It's Rediscovering the Indies. And we're continuing our deep dive and do XPW. And we'll actually be recording part 3 this upcoming weekend. So
it's a 3-part series.
It may be 4.
4.
We don't know how lengthy we're going to discuss the trial. But the trial is going to take a big chunk. So it may be 4, but it may be 3.
Yes. I was on the Wrestling Inc. Daily podcast this week. Thanks to them for having me. You can check that out. That is on their podcast feed and their YouTube channel. I was also on the Place to Be Nation's Main Event podcast on Wednesday, or that's when it was recorded. You can, all the usual, you can get access to the WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet, which you must have if you truly want to understand and follow along the viewership that's happening across WWE Raw, SmackDown, NXT, AEW Dynamite, Impact Wrestling. And I even started a miscellaneous data tab for the other wrestling-related programs, including Miz and Mrs., Total Bellas, the A&E programs that we discussed earlier. And there's a lot going back to 2015 in that tab. Numerous tabs showing you all sorts of ways to analyze and view this data and make sense of it. Again, that's on the Patreon for only $5 a month. You get this only $5 a month. You might have some consultants that want to charge you hundreds of dollars per hour to investigate this data and help you make sense of it. Only $5 a month. Patreon.com/WrestleNomics. Also this week on the Patreon, there was a post about WWE and SmackDown viewership and how it traditionally declines in May and what we might expect in this month, May 2021. A further breakdown of WrestleMania 37 ticket sales, just putting that in a more digestible manner. And the WrestleNomics notebook usually comes out every week. And you could follow along with it for this podcast that you're listening to right now. So those are the plugs. Yeah, that's all of that for $5 a month. That's whatever we got for just the most recent week. Obviously, that's $5 for an entire month. So And thanks to everybody who does support through Patreon and helps us invest in doing things like being able to use an application called Extract Table so I can better grab data and help everybody analyze it and understand it. And we've used the money in the past for Facebook advertising to conduct surveys for equipment and things of that nature. And you can follow Russellnomics at Russellnomics. You can go to Russellnomics.com and you can follow me at Brandon Thurston. I'm Brandon Thurston. He's Chris Gullo. And we'll talk to you next time.